Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show with the biggest stories of the day. It's the Big 3 at 3, number one.
All right, Clint, yesterday we were at Kirby Eye's house, and the atmosphere was fantastic. And the Astros crushed the Red Sox 9-1 in Game 5 of the ALCS, and we talked about it going into teams in Major League Baseball postseason history in a seven-game series. The team that wins Game 5 when the series is tied, they go on to win the series 70% of the time. The Astros put themselves in a position to come home with two games left here to win a World Series, to get to a World Series, excuse me, by winning one of the two games, because Framber Valdez was an absolute ace superstar last night, and he's changed what feels like this series right now.
Yeah, biggest takeaway from last night is Framber Valdez's performance, obviously, but what it means in particular to the Astros moving forward. Number one, Framber Valdez moving forward. He's not a young guy that can't handle 162 game regular season and then loses all his basically develops a dead arm in the playoffs or can't from a workload standpoint can't handle 162 games plus the playoffs. That's clearly not the case. Clearly he has enough left in the tank to contribute in a major way. And then number two, what his performance did last night was allow the Astros' entire bullpen to have an extra day of rest, right? So you go along with all the momentum of having the one-game lead, coming home, having to win one of two at home. Well, guess what, man? They've got all guns are hot for Game 6 and Game 7 if they need both. And Framber Valdez was special, but the impact it has on this organization show moving forward is absolutely huge. And it's what a difference 48 hours can make, man. I mean, the Astros yes. went from having to win one of two just to bring this thing back
let's
to Houston
get it,
and have a chance.
Let's just get to Houston is what we're talking yep. about. That 2-1 lead, because of the pitching staff, that 2-1 lead that the Red Sox had felt even bigger than that, because you just knew the situation the Astros were in. By the way, make sure you stay tuned in this segment. Your chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to see Jake Owen at the Houston Open Concert Series at Minute Maid Park, November 12th. So make sure you stay tuned in this segment. Listen, your chance to win. Wait for the cue to call. But we were looking at that. We're like, man, God, what are they going to do? We know they're going to have to use the bullpen game in Game 4. And it was worse than you thought. Zach Greinke threw 38 pitches to record 4 outs. And you're like, oh, my God, now they got to go in it. And since then, now that you arrive here, as you say, what a different 48 hours makes. Now Framber Valdez just pitched in a way where hell nobody had to pitch, damn near. Ryan Stanek threw a 9th inning, but he's going to get a day off today, and everybody is going to be well-rested and ready to go. You've got all your bullets available to win one out of these two games, and they are most definitely in a great position. But it has been announced from Dusty that Luis Garcia will get the ball in Game 6. And Clint, it has not been good in his first two starts of the postseason. He struggled in a major way against the White Sox and struggled in his first start against the Red Sox. And Clint, it was like at no point did it look good. I mean, he was struggling from the jump. He gave up a grand slam in the first inning to the Red Sox in his last start. It'll be key for him to just be able to keep you in the game when he exits. Can it be a ball game where they're in striking distance, as you've said, before he exits?
Yeah, the formula doesn't change, man. I mean, the day on the calendar does. The opponent's the same. The formula's the same. If the starting pitcher for the Houston Astros can get them to the fourth inning where it's a low-scoring affair, whether they're up one or down one, whatever, or tied, it's fine. Just get them through three. The game has changed for Luis Garcia. Obviously, a quality start, 6 innings, three runs or fewer would be absolutely beautiful. But ultimately, right now, the formula moving forward is going to be the same for Jose Urquidy, by the way, if he does indeed start Game 7. It's going to be the same.
Urquidy.
That's right. It's get us to the fourth in striking distance, and then allow Dusty and Brent Strom to figure out what they want to do to bridge the gap between the fourth inning and the seventh, when you can then go some combination of Stanek Graveman and Presley, right? I mean, that's not perfect. It's not ideal. Obviously, the starter needs to go longer, but if you can just get them there, couple that with this lineup, which appears to be hot again, then you've got a pretty good formula to at least get one of the next two games. And so I think the formula stays the same as it was last night. If you get more than three or four out of Luis Garcia, then, hey, you're living right and you ought to win the ball game for damn sure.
Big 3-3, number two.
All right, the other major story happening here that we are all keeping an eye on, it is what John McClain came on our air and spoke about, and that is the potential move of the Texans trading their Pro Bowl quarterback, Deshaun Watson.
I believe Watson will be traded to the Dolphins. The Dolphins are one of the teams that's been talking to them off and on for months. Nick Caserio's one of 3-1s and 2-2s the entire time. Whether he'll get that, I don't know. I do know the Texans didn't want to put conditions on their trade. And I think that one thing Stephen Ross, the Dolphins owner, would want to know from Roger Goodell, is he going to be suspended? And because I'm hearing is that he won't be suspended, and there's a good chance he'll be traded. He'll be playing against the Texans on November the 7th in Miami.
Clint, I there's one thing. When I hear at the end there when he said, and when John McClain says it, I mean, these are, I would guess, educated guesses and not just shots in the dark. When he said that he's hearing that he won't be suspended, I am certainly surprised that it is just the Miami Dolphins in the mix. I am certainly surprised of that. We have heard potentially a three-team deal. I'm surprised Washington is not in the mix. I'm surprised other teams aren't in the mix if John McClain is hearing that the league potentially won't suspend Deshaun Watson. Because I felt like that was probably one of the major holdups, obviously the criminal part of this, and what kind of consequences he would get from the league.
Yeah, I think the one for me, if I were picking who I'm surprised isn't involved in this or isn't yet to be involved in this conversation, probably Philly.
Yeah.
But the whole won't be suspended and possibly playing against the Texans in early November if he does go to Miami, I don't think the NFL allows that to happen. Now he may get traded, and I think the whole point with the Dolphins is make the trade now. Act as if you're going to play him. Let the NFL put him on the commissioner's exempt list. Hopefully,
happen.
When it comes discipline time, you can say, look, the guy's already sat out X number of games, and you can get some time served, if you will. But start that clock as soon as possible. Man, to think that Deshaun Watson.
So you'd be surprised if he actually did, as John say, suited up against the Texans November 7th.
I wouldn't be surprised if a deal was done sooner rather than later. I would be absolutely shocked if Deshaun Watson is on the field versus the Texans November the 7th. Yes, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And, you know, it would be odd to think that the league would just say, yeah, go ahead and play. Go ahead and get on the field, because I think we've heard this reported as well. The league hasn't put him on any kind of list or any kind of commissioner's exempt list because there's been kind of an understanding that the Texans aren't playing him.
Well, it's been an easy decision to this point because the Texans aren't playing him, right? And really more so because he's refusing to play for the Texans. So right now it's been easy for the NFL to kind of stay out of the mix, if you will. But I think if he's traded to the Dolphins and the Dolphins do anticipate putting him on the field, especially as early as the first week of November, I would be shocked if the NFL didn't step in and say he's going on the commissioner's exempt list. Now, I was shocked that they didn't put him on the commissioner's exempt list when the season started, when he reported to Houston and allowed Houston to trot him out on the practice field and things of that nature. And people wonder whether he was going to play or not. So I've been shocked before. Crazier things have happened. But Deshaun Watson in a Miami Dolphins uniform playing against the Texans November the 7th, that's less than a month, isn't it? What is this? We're mid-October, ain't we?
I was gonna say, maybe he has the playbook.
Ooh.
Maybe he has the Dolphins playbook already. Also, real quick note with the Texans, they announced that they have placed safety Terrence Brooks on injured reserve with a leg contusion. So another player that is in the rotation is not going to be available for them for the next few weeks. So Terrence Brooks on the injured reserve.
He got a leg contusion?
Leg contusion.
Man, I thought it was – hell, he had a lung is what Cully called it before. He must have some contusion problems.
Leg and lung contusion issues for old Terrence Brooks, but he's going to be out.
Big 3 at 3, number 3.
I'll tell you who do got some damn problems. That is the L.A. Dodgers. The L.A. Dodgers are at the brink, and I'm sure – I wonder how people in Houston feel about that. The Dodgers at the brink of elimination. They play game 5 tonight as they trail 3-1 after they just got tattooed 9-2 by the Braves. Eddie Rosario had 4 hits in the game, including 2 home runs yesterday, and he's not even one of their stars. But this could be it. The Dodgers could be done, and I am rooting hard for the Dodgers purely because I want your mother to make a video. Can she make a video anyway? Can she make one when they lose? Can she make one about the Dodgers anyway? Because I just know she has something about Cody Bellinger. As mad as you are at him, I'm sure she's got something about Cody Bellinger that she's ready to unleash.
I would imagine that it doesn't take a whole lot for her to find something to unleash on. I'd imagine she's got – I hadn't talked to her. I'm going to be honest with you, man. I've watched that series from here there just to watch a little baseball other than the Astros. But I've paid no attention in terms of what the Astros have coming down the pipe because I've been so dialed into what in the hell are the Astros going to do down 2-1 getting skull drug in Boston. Now I can finally breathe a little bit. I'll be watching that game tonight along with some Thursday night football to kind of get an idea of what the hell is going on the other side of the league.
Yeah, it is. Coming up, our Sports Radio 610 Odyssey MLB Insider, our guy Tony Gwynn Jr. joins us coming up. And we got to get from him. Does he believe what Framber Valdez did last night completely changes the way you got to view the Houston Astros? We'll discuss that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Stern and the show.
The Astros have game 6 coming up tomorrow. And they lead in the series 3-2 behind the amazing masterpiece, as Joe Buck said last night, of Framber Valdez. And on the line with us now to talk about this series, Sports Radio 610 Odyssey MLB Insider Tony Gwynn Jr. joins us. And Tony, tell me this. Not a lot of people saw this coming from Framber Valdez. We know it's in there, but not a lot saw it coming. Does this change how the Astros should be viewed if he's pitching like this?
Well, first, thanks for having me on, gentlemen. I don't know why anybody wouldn't expect Framber Valdez to pitch the way he did. I know he had a rough start, but we've seen this from him before. We've seen him maybe not go 8 shutty, but he certainly has pitched like this in the playoffs before. So yesterday, it just seemed like he had the sinker working. He basically had, you know, both sides of the plate covered, two-way fastball. And, you know, it was really difficult with the ball down all night long. It just really gave Red Sox no opportunities to have any big innings because he wasn't making any mistakes. And I said all along, their offense would carry them. And if they could get any type of pitching, they would be dangerous. And I didn't think it would come from Framber necessarily. I think that's pretty safe to say. I think there were some other options on the board there, but he stepped up when they needed it most and got them a huge win.
Bigger moment for the Astros, man. Christian Javier's 3 shutout innings in game 4 or Framber Valdez 1 run, 8 inning start in game 5?
You know what? I think it's Christian the night before because that's the game that turns that series around to me. You have a bullpen day going up against, you know, a Boston lineup that has been as hot as any lineup. And to get the kind of production that the Astros got out of their bullpen is what really playoffs is about, right? Nobody could have predicted that, but they got solid innings from that bullpen. And they put themselves in a position where they're 1 win away from a World Series again.
Yeah, Tony Gwynn Jr., our Sports Radio 610 Odyssey MLB insider. I'll be honest with you, Tony. I can't believe they're here. We talked about those 2 pitching performances, but those are about the only pitching performances they've had in the entire series. And somehow they're sitting here leading 3-2. Their bullpen's fully rested, and they got 2 games to win here in Houston to get to the World Series. Have you ever seen a series like this where a team is in the driver's seat like the Astros and gotten the pitching they've had?
Not maybe since that World Series against the Nationals where they were the road team won every game until actually won every game in that whole entire series. So I just think, listen, we've all had conversations all season long about how this offense at any given moment can hang an 8 spot on you. And it doesn't matter what inning. They can do it early, they can do it late. And, you know, they've also had moments where that offense has been, you know, basically has disappeared. And we've seen both sides of that in this series. And I just think when you have an offense as potent as the Astros do, that can hang up runs really one through nine in that lineup, anything's possible. That's why I thought the series would go 7, and I thought it would look exactly the way it is. Both teams have scored just a crazy amount of runs in their wins, and I suspect that won't change. It'll be the same thing down the stretch in these last two games.
Tony, what about the impact of Fromber's 8-inning start last night, man, on those around him and the down the stretch in this particular series for the Astros?
Obviously, it's big for Fromber for his own confidence, but I don't think there's any question that the biggest gain is that everybody else got to rest. I mean, he literally provided a day off for that bullpen before there was a day off. So they're going to basically get 2 days of rest. And in those type of games, those type of innings, which are pretty much all high leverage, those 2 days are like gold. And the mere fact that Fromber was able to provide that for his ball club. I mean, even in some of the Red Sox better starts, they haven't been able to do that with their bullpen at any point. So I think the advantage at this point is to a rested Astros bullpen. I said from the beginning, this series was about who could provide the most resistance from a pitching standpoint. The Astros have been that team so far. And because of Fromber's start, they're sitting in a driver's seat right now. Now they still got work to do. We've seen the Red Sox take some games here in Houston, but it's a much more difficult task for them at this point.
Tony Gwynn Jr., our Sports Radio 610 Odyssey MLB insider, joins us. Tony, has Dusty Baker clearly outmanaged Cora in this series?
I think this has been as good of a back and forth managerial standpoint in any of the series. And I say that because when you're getting beat up from a pitching standpoint on both sides, right, because it's happened, the trick becomes trying to find a way to get innings without extending guys too long. And I think Dusty has done a tremendous job of that. And really, Alex has done a great job of it, too. Right now, it's in Dusty's favor because they've found a way to win the last two games, and he gets Fromber's start the other night. So, for me, they've both done a good job, but Dusty, I think, has done an exceptional job of maneuvering. But, you know, there's some luck involved in this, and having Fromber have the start that he had that last game, you know, gives Dusty a little bit of a leg up and a little more maneuverability.
Tony Gwynn Jr. joining us, our Odyssey MLB insider. Tony, there was a lot. This has died down a little bit now, but there was a lot of conversation after Game 4 about Martin Maldonado and his. I mean, just the inability to swing the bat and even look confident at the plate and help this lineup. And then Castro comes in off the bench, and boy, he looks really good and has a game winning hit. There was a lot of conversation about, hey man, maybe the Astros should go with Castro at catcher. Your thoughts on Maldonado versus Castro and whether the Astros should possibly make that move?
Play that game if you want to. I think there's a reason why Maldi's been out there every night. I mean, they took three catchers originally because they knew Maldi's offense wasn't exactly, you know, what you would hope for it to be. But I think what you get defensively, it really doesn't matter. Are we saying that the Astros lack offense with Maldi in?
No, I don't think we are, Tony. I don't
Castro's working the board for the next hour just in case.
I don't think he did. Tony just dropped off and hung up. Well, I bet he's cussing right now. I bet he's in his car.
That was one of those you slip and hit the end on your phone.
I bet he's, damn it.
What do you think happens on, when you're on a phone call like that and that noise is made? Because usually it doesn't sound like that when somebody hangs up on me.
Yeah, it is. And whenever that, I usually just have it potted down before they hang up.
No, but I'm talking about on my phone.
When I'm
talking to somebody, I say, all right, bye. It doesn't go doing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's our system.
I think Clint pissed him off that time.
Seems like it.
Don't try to bring me into your. Don't even try.
I think it was Clint, obviously, his last word. When he calls back, tell him, man, everybody was hanging on your words on that.
I don't think he's going to call back.
Try that. Yeah, he's calling right now, isn't he?
Nope.
It ain't him. He tried to try, play that game if you want to.
Nah, he look at that phone drop and he looked at that clock and said, oh,
it's over, baby.
Them boys going to break at 29. I'm out, man.
Let me get the hell up out of here. Let me get up out of here, Tony Quinn. Wow, boy, I was wanting to see how he felt about Losa's celebration, if he had any problem with it. You know, Tony probably be one of them guys that try to have his pitcher hit him.
Well, we know what we're starting the interview with next week.
Yeah. No, seriously, come right back with it. Clint, jump right in. Again, so that Maldi Castro thing we meant to get into. All right, Paul Charchin, he's going to join us next. Charch will help you get your fantasy lineups together. And Deshaun Watson is making him think and wonder, should he be on people's minds and in people's lineups coming up soon? We'll discuss that with Charch next.
Cat Purple Drank will keep you warm on a cold day.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
Fantasy football time, trying to get those lineups set. Charts, the best in the business, Paul Charchin, CEO of GuillotineLeagues.com, joins us as he does at this time each and every Thursday. All right, Charts, Deshaun Watson, the news is heating up. We've heard from a couple of guys that we really trust around here, John McClain especially, that Deshaun Watson could be traded to the Dolphins as soon as this week. And he also said he does not believe he's hearing that Deshaun Watson will get suspended. From a fantasy perspective, when you hear that, you hear that potential news, what's your advice to people?
Well, just because he may get traded, and maybe he will, doesn't necessarily mean he gets played this year. There's a real scenario where some team figures, okay, we're going to buy low right now on Watson. This is as cheap as he'll ever be, and we're going to wait out some kind of resolution to his legal situation. And I think that makes some sense, because if you don't do that, like let's say the trade goes down now, and some owner, let's say he goes to Miami, and Dolphins owner Stephen Ross is going to have to go to a press conference and say something like this. If he was going to start Deshaun Watson, he'd have to say something like this. Sure, Watson's actions made him unstartable in Houston, but here in Miami, it's game on with those 22 sexual assault lawsuits. Yeah, it doesn't really fly, you know? I think it just doesn't feel like there are many teams that if they had the interest in trading for Deshaun Watson, also have the guts to start him now when Houston won't. And so I just think there's a lot of reasons why you could still figure Watson doesn't end up playing this year. So I'm saying for most of you, don't burn the roster spot. You need roster spots. It's the bi-pocalypse. We have six teams on bye. You need roster spots, and you can probably find somebody who's more likely to help you than Deshaun Watson. You guys are right there. What do you think?
I think there's zero chance that he plays this year, but I don't think it's because the team doesn't want to play him. I think it's because the NFL, if he ever gets to a place where he is interested in getting on the field, like if Miami trades for him and he is going to be willing to play. Right now, he's not willing to play in Houston. That's a big part of the problem as well. And if he was in Miami and wanted to get on the field and wanted to play, I believe personally that the NFL steps in at that point and doesn't allow a guy with those 22 civil lawsuits pending. I don't think they allow him to play. So I agree with your point of him not playing personally, with him not playing this season. But I do believe it's because the NFL doesn't let him, and it's not because a team would have to justify playing him when the Texans wouldn't. Because I think the Texans would damn sure attempt to play him, or would have attempted to play him if they could have got things back on track before the season started.
While we're talking about Houston quarterbacks, Can we pivot to Davis Mills for just a second?
Absolutely.
Well, don't take out Davis Mills.
No, I tweeted twice, once on Sunday mid-game and then once on Monday, that Davis Mills has got an NFL arm. The dude can complete hard passes that a lot of people cannot make. A lot of starters, you know, wobbly starters in this league don't have his arm. I see him throwing these sideline out passes with a ton of zip, and he can make that pass. I saw him throw a right sideline pass, deep sideline pass, like 25 yards. Beautiful, right on target. And everybody's coming back at me like, oh, did you see his three interceptions, Church? Well, I'm not saying that he's perfect. He's a young kid learning the job who wasn't supposed to start any games yet, but he's got an NFL arm. And I think there's a real foundation to build on with Davis Mills.
There's a chance if he can connect the dots and mature and develop that they could at least take him seriously in terms of maybe buying himself another year to get evaluated. I do believe the physical skill set is there. Now he's got some things that he's got to just flat cut out of his game, or it's going to be a short-lived starting quarterback position even for the Houston Texans. Hey, let's stay in Houston Let's stay at the quarterback position and stay with a quarterback that spent some time in Houston. Went to college right here, Case Keenum. He's starting for the Cleveland Browns tonight. What do you think of Keenum tonight in that particular game with all those weapons around him?
Yeah, I don't like him because there aren't any weapons around him, and I'm very nervous about this game. Keenum's in. You got your backup start. Your backup quarterback. You got two back. You're starting two running backs are out. Now, Jarvis Landry is probably coming back for this game, but Odell Beckham probably isn't back for this game. And nobody's talking about the fact the Browns are missing their two starting tackles who probably missed this game. There's just not enough talent left. And if this were a different defense they were facing, I might say, sure, we're going to dart throw on some of these Browns. But it's Denver. They're really good. Fourth in points allowed, 10th in pass defense, fourth in rush defense. There's just not going to be a lot of opportunities here. Jarvis Landry comes back, but he's probably on a pitch count of some kind, and he hasn't played. He hasn't played yet this year. D. Ernest Johnson, your starting running back, got a little run last year at 5 yards per carry, but this is a very good run defense. There's nothing on the Browns side that really excites me. The other side, you got Teddy Bridgewater trying to rebound from his worst game in memory, 3 interceptions and a fumble. The Cleveland defense, when they're not playing MVP caliber quarterbacks like Justin Herbert and Kyler Murray, have been very good. Everybody else is averaging 166 yards and one touchdown pass per game, and that's about all I think you're going to get out of Teddy in this game.
Boys, I knew Case Keenum didn't have the tackles and the running backs. I was not aware that Odell Beckham Jr. was not playing.
Yeah, I know Landry's
coming
back.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got some good tight ends.
You need all your weapons against this defense. Mm-hmm. Good gosh. I didn't realize that Odell Beckham Jr. was out again.
There's a chance he still plays. He's got a grade 3 AC joint sprain, and apparently it's massively painful. And he came back and finished. He left last week's game, came back and finished on it. But the expectation is he's not going to go here.
I've had the AC. The worst thing there for him, I'm sure it's painful. But
grade three sounds high.
It doesn't matter if it's. They can deaden it, and that, the problem is with that, with that particular sprain, you can't get your elbow above your shoulder. Right,
yeah, so that could be a problem.
So yeah, any high ball.
I just literally watched a highlight of him making a catch of something that it sounds like he would be able to do. ball was thrown his way,
they can deaden it. And he can get his hand up there, but you don't have the same control. And so it would, if it's a much more severe sprain, that could be a problem, no question.
Yeah, well, fortunately, Case Keenum, known for his pinpoint accuracy, would never need Odell Beckham to extend his arms.
Yeah, he'll throw him low for him to go ahead and be able to catch it. Paul Charchin, guillotineleagues.com. Check it out. One of the best in the business, if not the best in the business, when it comes to fantasy knowledge. I want to get back to this ass-kicking that I think is probably going to happen in Arizona coming up on Sunday. How do you measure this? When you got players like DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt coming back playing against a team in an organization, that there could still be some extra motivation for them to be like, when you look at games like this, do you say, okay, DeAndre Hopkins is playing against the Texans and everything that happened there, oh, I got to bet on him. He's going to have a big day.
Depends on how they left, right? You know, if you left of your own free will, like, why would J.J. Watt have any ill will?
Well,
you know, there's no reason, right? But DeAndre Hopkins might look at it as a bit of a slap in the face, left under bad terms. And, you know, granted, he got, you know, he might even look at it like, that's all you got for me. All you got was a second round pick and David Johnson. Come on, that's terrible. So it depends a little bit on how you left, but mostly I don't care. And I'm just looking at matchups and trying to figure out where some opportunities. Like, I like DeAndre Hopkins against Desmond King and Terrence Mitchell. You know, those are matchups I like. That to me means even more to me than any revenge motivation, because your revenge motivation as a receiver has to extend to the quarterback too. You got to have the quarterback who throws you the ball to get, let you actually execute your revenge. And that doesn't always happen.
Well, I'm just saying, David Johnson circled this game. He said he circled this game against the Cardinals. So maybe he should move up on your running back board coming up this week, because David Johnson said he's ready. Maybe. He is ready for this game.
There's an opportunity here, right? This is a bad run defense. And if Houston's going to stay competitive,
it's not gonna
they
be
have
job.
To run the ball on a team that's giving up 130 rushing yards a game. This is your one obvious path to victory. And whether it's, I don't know if it's David Johnson, it's been the last 2 weeks, it's clearly been Ingram with 16 and 18 carries, but he's done nothing with those. So, you know, maybe they may just make the pivot here and give David Johnson the chance in the revenge game.
Oh, boy. I tell you what,
David Johnson, he circled it, baby.
Yeah, okay. Well, hey, what about Zach Ertz, man? I mean, and this is why I ask, because obviously this is an explosive offense, right, that he's joined. They were aggressive after him for a reason, so I'm assuming he's going to be a big part of the game plan. And then secondly, Lovie Smith is a cover two, Tampa two coordinator all day long, and most of the time that means that a tight end or an inside slot receiver could have a monster day. What do you think about Zach Ertz this week against the Texans?
Yeah, I like Ertz already. I mean, even if he knows, I don't know, 25% of the playbook at this point, you'll know the plays that are important for him. And your squad's allowed more fantasy points to that position, the tight end position, than any other team. Mm-hmm. They've also given a tight end touchdown up in 5 or 6 games. So this is a great spot start for Zach Ertz. You know, longer term, Ertz is going to maybe suffer just from the plethora of targets that Kyler Murray's got. I mean, he drops back to pass. He can look left and see there's DeAndre Hopkins. There's Rondale Moore in the slot. He looks right. I've got AJ Green playing shockingly well. He's got Christian Kirk. He's got Zach Ertz. He can dump it out of the backfield to Chase Edmonds. I mean, it's just so many guys to go to that some games, the ball just doesn't come your way. And that's going to happen to Zach Ertz sometimes, but not in this game. Zach Ertz is sitting on a nice matchup here.
All right, Charge, before we get you out of here, give us some sleepers. Give our listeners some guys that they should maybe take a look at to fill the roster up.
Yeah, and here in the bipocalypse, I know you need him. Jameis Winston available in two-thirds of leagues. His games have either been boom or bust. He's had three monster games in which he's averaged 3.5 touchdown passes, and Seattle hasn't contained any passer this year. They're giving up 306 yards and 2 touchdowns per game. And not only do I like Winston as a sleeper, I like his top receiver, Marquez Callaway. A very strong positive matchup. Seattle's been shuffling the deck with their cornerbacks. They haven't found anybody who can really guard anybody. Sidney Jones is the latest guy they're trying. He's getting destroyed. The last 4 teams to face Seattle have also found success with their tight ends. You could go with one of the tight ends there too. But I like Callaway. I like Winston. And then one more for you. Darnell Mooney, available in half of fantasy leagues. He's the Chicago wide receiver going up against Tampa. The problem for Mooney has always been Chicago throws less than any team in the league, but Tampa sees more passes than any team in the league. So in theory, Justin Fields is going to do more throwing here. Darnell Mooney gets deep once or twice, and Justin Fields throws a nice deep pass for a rookie. That all he needs is one or two connections on that battered secondary that's already missing Richard Sherman and Carlton Davis, and that might be enough to spring Mooney, who I like as a third sleeper for you.
All right, Charge. What's the latest at Guillotine? Let everybody know how they can get connected.
All my player rankings available for free at guillotineleagues.com. We're still making new leagues. And if I've learned anything from Tony Gwynn Jr., I'm supposed to just hang up on you right now.
Charge. Yeah, he did. Just ended the call. I think he was mad at Clint. I personally believe that. That's how it happens. And there's Charge. Just hangs up on us. Just hangs up on us, of course. So that's Paul Charge. And Charge is always with us each and every week, helping you with your fantasy lineup. All right, here we go. As we get going here, game 5 or game 6 coming up, And we heard, actually, as Charge just talked about, we just heard from Tony Gwynn Jr., and he brought up a really good point about how big Framber's start was last night. This was Tony earlier.
Obviously, it's big for Framber for his own confidence, but I don't think there's any question that the biggest gain is that everybody else got to rest. I mean, he literally provided a day off for that bullpen before there was a day off. So they're going to basically get 2 days of rest. And in those type of games, those type of innings, which are pretty much all high leverage, those 2 days are like gold. And the mere fact that Framber was able to provide that for his ball club, I mean, even in some of the Red Sox better starts, they haven't been able to do that with their bullpen at any point. So I think the advantage at this point is to a rested Astros bullpen. I said from the beginning, this series was about who could provide the most resistance from a pitching standpoint. The Astros have been that team so far, and because of Framber's start, they're sitting in a driver's seat right now. Now, they still got work to do. We've seen the Red Sox take some games here in Houston, but it's a much more difficult task for them at this point.
That's what Framber did last night. As Tony Gwynn just said, put them in the driver's seat with his performance and set them up to don't know what'll happen, but set them up to have the advantage in this series.
Yeah, show. Look, I think, I mean, obviously, if we watch that game, we were at Kirby Ice House, and it was a hell of an atmosphere, and it was a great game, had a lot of fun, and he absolutely was dealing. There's no question about it. So the performance itself, as it's happening, was an absolutely monster moment in this series, no question about it. But if you look at the impact that Framber Valdez's performance literally has on the Astros moving forward and on several different fronts, right? Number one, I don't know how much Dusty Baker and Brent Strom were concerned before this outing. I don't know how much, you know, Lance McCullers showed him he wanted to be the ace, and then he was obviously injured, and now you don't have an ace. I don't know how much all of that starting pitching rotation and the struggles and the injury, I don't know how much concern that caused inside the building, inside the clubhouse for the Astros. But I know for me, I was majorly concerned that you didn't have an ace. Not only did you not have an ace, but the wheels appeared to be coming off of you young guys. Framber going eight absolutely squashed those concerns for me. I don't believe that Framber is a young, inexperienced starting pitcher in this league that is struggling at the end of his first long regular season of 162 games, and he's running out of gas and his arm's dead at this point. Obviously, it's not. He was dealing last night. So that concern is by the wayside. And the Astros have a starter moving forward that they can lean on in this starting rotation, at least one, right? You'd like to have several, but at least one that you can lean on moving forward. That concern is by the wayside, right? And then you talk about the impact that this, him going eight innings and Brent Strom and Dusty Baker not having to ask the bullpen to even warm up damn near. The fact that they are unbelievably rested right now for game 6 and 7 in this series is a huge direct impact from Framber Valdez's performance last night. Show, think about it. The only two guys that I would guess are off limits in game 6 are Framber and probably Christian Javier. Christian Javier could go.
I think he probably could go.
If you needed him, he probably could. But he emptied the tank. He emptied the tank 2 nights ago.
So he'd be so, what? Yeah, 3 days?
3 days rest with the off day today. So, well, 2 days because you had yesterday and today is going to be the off day. So it would the game's tomorrow. So, yeah, I mean, two to 3 days. But those are the only two guys. Framber obviously out. But, like, Christian's a guy you go – Maybe not. Would rather not pitch him, but probably could. I mean, everybody else should be sitting on red. I mean, there's no question about it. They should be ready to rock and roll.
And on red so. and feeling good.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. Ready to rock and roll. Maybe I should have said sitting on green. Whatever the hell. They're ready. They're rested. They're loaded. And they're in that position because Framber Valdez stood up when the team needed it the most and worked his magic. So – huge impact outside of the eight innings that he was actually on the mound last night as it pertains to the Astros. And, boy, he's helped put them in an amazing spot to wrap this series up sooner rather than later.
Continue to harp on it. Hey, we walked into it. Clint walked into it with the expectation, listen, Doug, just give me 3 innings.
Come on.
Give me 3. I walked in. I said, I need 5 to 6 in that. And what he did was turn in – the best pitching performance of all the postseason today. He had the best pitching performance from anything in the Dodgers series with the Giants. He had the best performance of any player, any pitcher in the postseason. And I mean, that's beyond anything that anyone could even hope or ask for, and he put that forward. All right, Clint's Football at 4 coming up next. No Whitney Merciless. No problem, baby. We'll explain what that means coming up next.